Welcome to the podcast of Emmanuel Baptist Church in Louisville, Kentucky. Listen with us to the Word of God as we build a community from all cultures where Christ is King.
Well, it's good to see so many brothers here this morning, and really delighted to have you here for this, really in my mind, a really special event. We're really blessed to have Mark here this morning. I'm going to tell you a little bit about him in a minute. Just before we begin, I want to make it very clear. Pastor Ben preached a sermon a number of years ago where he continued to say throughout the sermon, work is worship. So, anyway, one of the things we see in the book of Ephesians is that all of our work is to be done unto the Lord. So a huge part of our worship is not just singing on Sunday morning or praying at a prayer meeting, but a huge part of our worship occupies those 8, 9, 10, or more hours a day where we're working, and that is to be done unto the Lord as worship. And what we're excited about this morning is to really get the chance to think about how business plays into the worship that God calls us to in all of our lives. And if you've been around Emmanuel for a while, you know that one of the pillars we build this church on is worship that feeds the soul. And that doesn't just mean that Sunday morning will feed your soul. That means that learning to live a life of worship really during all the hours of the day is what's going to feed your soul and build us up into a community from all cultures where Christ is King. This morning, what we're doing to that end is I'm going to just kind of interview Mark Franco. Mark is the husband of Tanya, the father of 8, who we have 2 of here this morning. Cameron and Seth are here with us. And he's also a member of Sojourn Community Church. He's actually in the elder development process at Sojourn and currently oversees a few community groups there. He holds a degree in engineering and is now the president and CEO of a Mixer Direct, a very successful company here in Louisville. And so really what we're going to do is I'm going to interview him for a little bit, and then we'll make sure that we have time to take questions from you, brothers. So please do jump in and take them. And the goal is really to get a vision for what God is doing in business. And really, at the end, we want to explore how business can really interact with the mission of the church and the mission of advancing the gospel to the ends of the earth. So thank you so much for being here, Mark. I'm going to give you a round of applause.
Thanks for inviting us out. Great.
Maybe you could start off by telling us a little bit about your testimony.
Sure, I'd be glad to. Actually, I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, not in a Christian family. And so we went to a Catholic church. I always wonder, just thinking about it from a non-Christian context, there is a dead guy hanging in the front of this building, you know, that I'm going to each week and no idea what's going on at all. So actually, when I was 12 years old, I said to my parents, I don't want to go to this place with a dead guy hanging here. And they were like, neither do we. So so we stopped going to church at that point. And interestingly enough, though, as life persisted, I got involved in the occult and a lot of things going on with that. But the Lord kind of miraculously kind of reached in and just saved me through my girlfriend, wife now, who I don't know why she was dating me, but she shared the gospel with me and the guiltiness of sin. I felt the guiltiness of sin without even really understanding what sin was or even thinking it even existed. But I just felt the guiltiness of it, and I knew I needed some way to get rid of this guiltiness. And then she just shared the simplicity of the gospel of Christ and was transforming right there and then.
How old were you about then?
I was 19 years old.
So then much of your adult life, maybe even before, has been occupied in business and rethinking about how business connects to the mission of the Great Commission. So tell us a little bit about your history in business and about Mixer Direct.
Sure. What's interesting is that actually soon after coming to Christ, maybe a couple years later, I really felt, I need to serve in the church. I really think, you know, my goal, and I thought what service to the church meant was, hey, I need to be in full-time ministry. And so I set this goal of saying, okay, I'm going to be in full-time ministry. But I got to do this business thing on the side because I got to pay the bills. And what was interesting that I found as in working in business and then heading to seminary here in Louisville and saying, okay, well, I guess I got to work it. I have a chemical engineering degree. I probably should use that. and working in a business in town here, and just finding, you know, wait a second, you know, my opportunities in this business to share the gospel, to minister, to be able to, you know, love people and care for them was tremendous, even compared to like the work in the local church. And so I was like, well, but no, that's not what I'm supposed to be doing. And there was this conflict for a long time, and what this looked like of saying, well, I'm really, you know, moved to care in my business and to be in this, the business I was in. And God kept on like moving me up in the business. The right person would leave. There was a point where, you know, I couldn't pay for my seminary education anymore because God had called me to a church that was non-Southern Baptist, and so my tuition doubled. Like, what am I going to do with this? And so I was praying about it, and the Lord said, hey, go into the president of the company's office and say, there was a vice president position that was open at the time, and say, you will do that position. Like, God, that's a crazy thing to do. I've never managed one person, let alone vice president of a company. And but I was like, all right, worst case, I just mark it back to your desk, you know. So I went in there and told the guy, hey, look, you know, this position's open, you know, I can do it well, I'll be faithful to it. What do you think about giving me the job? And he looked at me and said, okay, it's yours. And I didn't know this, that he was getting ready to sell the company. He just needed to throw some person in that spot. And so it wasn't because I was great, but just because, and then I went right to the bathroom, sat down on the toilet and was like, oh no, I have no idea how to do anything. And what was great about that is that the Lord had a plan in that. Like, I found, oh, wait a second, he's made me to kind of to be in that position and to be able to operate there, to be a good steward and to care and love for people. And it started that position kind of started the transformation of my thoughts on that. To the point where I had actually started a nonprofit mission organization here in Louisville, still operating today, and then, you know, kind of a year into that, realized, and I think the board realized it too, that you know, for profit is where, you know, where I need to be at, which sounds weird, but there was just a realization that in for profit that I can align, you know, what I'm doing with my cash flow. And in the nonprofit, I've always like, okay, I'm going to try and raise money as much as possible. And then here's what I'm really trying to do. And it wasn't lined up. I was trying to, like, you know, do two things at one time, which the beauty of for-profit is, hey, I derive, for exactly the ministry I want to do, the caring I want to do, I derive my income from that. So that both all my motives and all my direction were kind of lined up.
When you say, like, all the caring I want to do, do you mean all the caring you want to do is to make fabulous mixers, or do you mean caring that goes alongside of that? Like, what is
it's that? It's pretty, I use that as a very holistic term. Okay. So, you know, it's not just making mixers, it's not divorced from that. So being able to produce, for example, a pharmaceutical company that we deal with, being able to, like, produce mixing equipment that allows them to very inexpensively produce pharmaceutical drugs allows for that to come to the market at a lower price point, which allows access to that drug at a much, and so I'm actively caring for you by taking that, the cost of that manufacturing process down, and so there is that. But then there's so much more than that, the employees. So, you know, we actually, you know, have made it from the beginning a desire to minister to the employees. We could do that ourselves, my partner and I, at the beginning, but we're big enough now, around 23, 25 employees, and that we actually hire a chaplain that comes in and pastors our people. Even though half of them aren't believers, but at the same time, they're building relationships there. They're sharing the gospel each week with them as needed and as opportunity allows. And then also with our vendors and our customers. I mean, so it, and then even just taking the cash flow and the operations, and then we have a desire to do church planting. We're starting in France, in southern France, working with some of the IMB people that are there, and they're going as kind of mixer and direct salespeople, and they said, and calling on plants and building relationships that way. I don't even care if they sell anything. They're integrating into the community there.
But from what I've heard from you, you do care if they sell something.
All right. I lied.
Okay.
Thank you. I lied. Its success is still there if they don't sell anything, yeah. Although I do deeply care whether they sell things. and so, because, I mean, really, what sales is sustainability, too. So I love my investors.
That's why I wanted you to bring this up. Not because you're a greedy, money-hungry venture.
I can be, but by God's grace, he's transforming me. But yeah, that really, if I love my investors well, then I'm selling and giving them a good return for their money as well. And so
essentially the distinction you're making is that there's going to be sort of a view where business is a necessary evil to get to ministry.
Uh-huh.
But instead what we're talking about is doing business well, love someone by bringing the bottom line down.
Yeah.
On a product, business loves someone by caring for the employees, and then business loves the people you get to fund with the profits by then launching explicit missions, if you will,
right.
From that point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Wayne Grudem really does a good job in talking about, you know, business for the glory of God. If you guys have ever read any stuff by Wayne Grudem, that book is really kind of instrumental. It's a short little thing, but it really kind of goes to why. You know, what is fundamentally good about business? And fundamentally, business, when done correctly, is about love. I mean, I think you put that really well. You love people doing this. It's fundamentally about love. And so when you're making the world wealthier, because that's what you're doing, like you're using money velocity, money moving around, and the world becomes one mixer wealthier or one, you know, chair wealthier by this money moving around. It's kind of actually an amazing, almost seemingly like creation ex nihilo, and somewhat when you look at it, because it's kind of weird how just the money moving around seems to create all this thing. And when, you know, there's corruption and things like that, that money velocity flows because it's accumulated in one area. And so where sin kind of really permeates systems, that money doesn't have as much velocity and doesn't produce like a wealth core that are beneficial to all people. I'm getting way too much.
No. We're going to come back to capitalism because my American brothers are trying to catch up with Canada in terms of socialism in recent years. So we'll talk a little bit about capitalism in a minute. But you wrote for your business a set of values,
yes.
11 points of core values for the business. And I'm going to read some of them at different points during our time. But can you just begin, when did those come into being? Why did they come into being? What's the gist of them?
Before we even knew Mixer Direct was going to be called Mixer Direct, or that we were even going to build mixers, my partner and I, you know, got together and said, okay, you know, we're going to start a business. We don't even know what it's going to be. But we know what we want it to be about. We want it to be about these kind of core things. And we just sat down, and before we wrote the business plan or anything, and said, here, this page and a half of values of what we want this business to be about, and in terms of how it's based on the scripture and based on love, and that's both that love exhibits itself in employees and the environment and these kind of things, and that we want to be kind of about these things, and then we decide, okay, we had a bunch of different business models we were looking at. It wasn't until that we set those core beliefs that we said, okay, now what are we going to do to make money? Cause it really, the whole, it really almost doesn't, not that it doesn't matter which thing, but any business can be based on the value. And you decide, okay, what do I know? I mean, I knew mixing equipment. That's where I was vice president of product development in. I had developed most of the product line for this company. I mean, my non-compete was just wearing out. You know, it's like all these things were coming together. It's like, oh, well, I know mixing equipment. Do that. Yeah. And there's so much opportunity that it almost doesn't matter what you kind of plug on to the front end of it, that these core values were the core values of the corporation.
So let me read you guys a few of these, and I'll ask some follow-up questions. But you can find these at the Mixer Direct website and just under our values, which is the bottom of the webpage. And it's just amazing to see the kind of worldview thinking that you'd see in great books of theology or ethics right there on a business's webpage. Really governing how they're doing business. So let me just read a few of them. One, The founders of Mixture Direct operate from biblical Christian worldview. Consequently, our company's values will be drawn from and reflect that set of values. Because we believe that a biblical worldview best corresponds with reality, we have a strong confidence that these values are valid and true, and conforming to them is most likely to be beneficial to our operations and our people. We believe that these values will effectively motivate ourselves and our employees because they will resonate with what is already written in the human soul. And then the second point, man and his environment. The earth was created to be a habitation for mankind, the pinnacle of God's creation, the reason for its existence. This has several implications. They work out development and people. Just in light of those points, do you think it's important for every businessman to sort of have that on their website? Or what, at what level should businesses be doing, following your example here?
I think that every believer should have that worked out. Whether it's going to be on a website or maybe because everyone has control of the website.
Right.
But we should have that worked out thing. What does this look like when I'm engaged? Because I'm not just been an entrepreneur. I've worked in $16 billion companies where I was just kind of at the entry level position. And I had not well developed, but a kind of basic theology there that when things started kind of butting up against that, I just remember a case where I was a new engineer for a company and just out of college, and the vice president of engineering in a $16 billion company said, we're going to lie to Ford about this. And I'm this little guy on a conference call. I'm like, I can't do this. And so I peep up. We shouldn't do that. You know, what was interesting about that is just God's faithfulness in that. So I had that. And so I said that, and then like, all kind of hell broke loose on me saying, we have to do this. We're going to fail. You know, there's no way we can convince the poor that we're actually going to do a good job on this. And I just said, we can't do this. It's wrong. You know, and I said, go wrong. And I believe that we'll figure out a way to make it happen before Ford gets here. Well, then that was my job. So, and by God's grace, I was able to do that. And this is another whole story of praying for a machine that wasn't working. And then it did work. And then you were like, how'd you fix that? I don't know. And so God was faithful. But then I was also very successful there. I mean, because of that. And that people say, oh, wait, this guy wouldn't lie and he figured out the problem. I mean, they didn't see God in that, but they saw the fact that, and then they said, we want this guy on a fast track for management.
But a guy's starting off his business and he's like, listen, I'm going to live by those core values, but putting them on the website, that's going to diminish sales immediately. You know, what would your response to be? And you're coaching this guy. What are you saying?
What I'm saying is that God's in control of sales, and that our faithfulness to Scripture and that is of primacy. And so, you know, when you put that out there, you could be compromised. People will walk away. We had one guy who kind of berated us on the website. For stating that what our core values were and that they were based on Christian belief, but in reality it kind of lets everyone know where you stand, and I'm not health and wealth really, like, oh, okay, you put it out there, God's gonna grow your company or whatever, but people are attracted to these core beliefs that are non-believers. There's one guy, he's kind of a country guy, who came and he was working part-time, one of the best kind of machinists in the city, and he's working part-time for us, and he came to us and said, I'm ready to go full-time. I was like, all right, well, buddy, why do you want to do that? And he's like, well, you know, you just do people right. And and we're like, okay. In his countrified way, he was saying, like, I identify with your core beliefs, even though I don't necessarily hold to them in their fullness, I identify how that looks in it. And so I don't think that you're, you know, when you're saying, okay, I want to compromise my sales up. No, you're explaining who you are. You're actually, you have business success is not just cash flow. I mean, part of it is, you've heard this philosophy of like the double bottom line. You say, okay, when we evaluate business success, it's more than just cash flow, and businesses more recently, even non-Christian ones, are kind of identifying this as, okay, social responsibility and these kind of things. But kingdom advancement for a believer who is part of your bottom line. And so you should be willing to kind of maybe even sacrifice some margin for being able to be able to see the gospel go out. So, and if you can't do that, where's your heart? And so there's a lot of development that needs to go in someone as they're starting business, saying, how should I best use this and transition it? It's harder. A friend of mine, you know, owns a very large business, like $150 million business. He's been trying to transform into doing this. So you have 500 employees and trying that most are non-believers. And so it's like, how do you do this? Be wise as serpents in doing it. And so you can get out and do it really kind of stupidly and without wisdom. But there is a way to kind of move. He always envies it. So nice that you started there. And then it becomes a given. It's a given that Mark is going to pray for us every other Monday as a whole company. It's a given that we're gonna teach every other Monday as well on
teach,
our
course.
I pull all the we pull all the employees together. My partner and I kind of switch off, and we go. We have what we call 26 virtues. So it takes our core values, and then we put them into 26 virtues, and then we teach you know where they are in the scripture, and then what that looks like to be played out and why it's important. And we're just teaching this constantly to the employees, and so you know as and they're. We kind of reference it back when we're managing. Our managers are expected to reference back to that on why, you know, you shouldn't be divisive. Here's why. One of our core values is unity. Here's why this is weird. I mean, this is why this is important. Or, you know, or forgiveness. Hey, you know, you two have been fighting. You know, our core belief is forgive. You need to forgive one another because this is what we do as Mixer Direct is we forgive one another and know that we're going to make mistakes. So, like, you know, these kind of virtues kind of work out, and that kind of permeates kind of gospel ministry throughout the company. And then it even goes on to our vendors as we thought, as we're going to deal, they'll start using that language. Like, we are not going to beat you down on price down to the nub because we care for you. And so we need a good price because we're not going to be a business. We don't get a good price. We want you to make money. That's not how you people normally negotiate. And so it's a new way, but our vendors then are super loyal to us. When we need something, we can get it fast, care, and like, and they're our friends, and they are come to us when they recognize God at work. And so even I've had customers like me be the first person they call when they're having marriage problems, and my customer's calling me saying, Mark, will you talk to me about my marriage? And so it's really much more dynamic. I think I got off.
A lot of what you're, no, everything you're saying really corresponds to, I want to just, your core value number four, you'll hear what this core value says, you've just heard so many illustrations of it. Because men are created in God's image, we value people above all earthly things and remember that they are ends more than means. That is, we value customers and prospects as more than sources of revenue, employees as more than just labor, suppliers as more than just sources of materials. As eternal souls made in God's image, we owe them justice, fairness, and respect, and we should always keep in mind that each person we touch has a life story that will matter, and that matters and will last forever. So really, that's what you've been talking about in terms of this countrified guy noticing, yep. He's noticing your attitude towards people. Where are the places where you're like heavily tempted not to abide by this, you know, but to really go the way of maybe more ordinary secular business?
I'm a sales guy.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, the temptation is to kind of oversell and say more than we can do as a company to come in and say, okay, yeah, we can do that in this amount of time and then not be able to do it. So the temptation is to be people pleasing. And so you come in, and whatever that person, we can do it, with no like respect for the fact that we got all these other people in line ahead of this person, and so the biggest temptation is to be people pleasing, and I think that even across the board, in that even to the employees and saying, I'm gonna tell you what you want to hear. I think it's a big temptation in business is to kind of say one thing and do another thing. And we have to understand that that is unloving, and that the most loving thing we do is to tell people the truth. And so that when we tell them the truth, even if it has negative consequences, in the end, we are fulfilling what Christ has called us to.
One of the things in your core values that I was the most shocked and happy to see in many ways was really an explicit defense of capitalism. And we're living in a time where capitalism is often viewed almost as a dirty word, really. And really, people are quickly abandoning the idea that capitalism and love could be compatible. It's really just the people on top getting high on the hog, and maybe something will trickle down. And anyway, you wrote this: capitalism is built on the notion that one is rewarded for supplying the needs of others by offering a product or a service for which they willingly pay a price. This echoes the Christian obligation to love our neighbor. We will encourage our employees to serve their internal and external customers well, and we will seek to advance those who best exhibit that attitude. As a joint enterprise, we will make it our priority to serve our external customers first, trusting that the rewards will follow. So just in a nutshell, why is capitalism important? Why is it good?
I think that capitalism and free market economy is a natural way that God has created mankind to interact, in as much as even like the family and other kind of structures that he created for us to work as society within. In free market, we're basically allowing for, I mean, the first free market, you know, Adam and Eve, hey, you go get apples, I'm going to go get peaches, we're going to meet back here in an hour, and then we're going to trade them, and then I'll have a balanced diet of apples. And so we're getting value of somebody else's work. You know, you're getting something better than what you work for, and you're able to kind of both of you be better off through serving one another in that. And so, you know, that's, now we have much more complex kind of economic systems than that, but basically they work in the same way. You know, I can make more mixers than I want. You know, I could make mixers all day long, pile them all up. Well, they're worth nothing to me to some extent, but somebody is willing to trade. They've got $1,000 or something, and they're like, hey, I don't need this $1,000 as much as I need a mixer. And so there, it's a nice trade where both win. Hey, I don't need this mixer. Hey, I need a mixer. I don't need this $1,000. I want the $1,000. And so, you know, another illustration that's in Grunen's book is him with his books. He says, yeah, I can have my house full of 20,000 copies of my book of systematic theology. It doesn't do me any good. It's worth nothing almost to me. But this person's willing to pay $28 or whatever it costs to get it. That's a good trade. And so we really, like, capitalism allows us to do what we do well and make that into service to a lot of other people who are willing to, where both people win. Good capitalism is where both people win in the transaction. And so now, capitalism can be corrupted, just like any other system, where you start to use power structures so that both people don't win. And so you have to buy this product. Well, I don't want it. Well, too bad. This is all you got. And, or I control food supply, and so I'm going to die, so I'm going to buy it for 3 times. And now I'm super wealthy for taking advantage of these people. And so there's ways of kind of capitalism to be taken advantage of and hijacked, where it's not a win-win, but true capitalism is where you're serving one another. I mean, only one another we're looking at. It really is a great fulfillment of the one another, and in a way that both parties walk away with better relationship, and both kind of richer in the items that help them serve the world better.
How many of you have, just out of curiosity, raise your hand, how many of you have read Wayne Grudem's Doing Business to the Glory of God or Business to the Glory of God? Anyone read that? Let me encourage you. Francis Kyle has just started up an Emmanuel bookstore on Amazon.com. I'll have that book available on there really quickly. That is a fantastic book and really just lays out a great biblical theology of business and even of competition and the goodness of it, all kinds of neat things.
And they're banking. They're part of banking. You can't read that book. Where I'm coming from. It's hard to read that book and like not be super excited about business, I think. Very difficult.
Wanted to shift gears for a bit. One of the things I've heard you speak a little bit about that's been so encouraging is just the role of business in mission. So you alluded to the project you're involved in in France. But tell me a little bit about, just as we lay a foundation for this, about Paul the tent maker and Paul's relationship to business. Because for so many of us, the idea is that some people do business and some people are missionaries. And Paul, we seem to see some of that coming together.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting in from a missions perspective. This model that we are kind of at the tail end of, I think, in the 21st century, that started in the 19th century, of, okay, that we'll have, like, societies that give money, and then, you know, they are full-time missions. That really only happened in that small period. For the rest of kind of first century to 19th, it was generally what we would call business as missions, or I call business on mission, where the person had a job. They were working, like, for example, 6th century Silk Road is a great kind of document example where they create a road from, Western Europe to India, and they create a trade route. In particular, that trade route was created, and there was a lot of people said, hey, there's a trade route here that with a lot of people that don't know the gospel up and down it. Let's trade in these blankets or things that people need on both sides and go back and forth and plant churches all along, and a lot of the churches still are there today, are planted churches all along that road. And then using the cash flow from that trade to the fund going back and forth and encouraging and preaching all through those churches. But when you get back to Paul, what's interesting, you know, he himself was a tent maker, and you think, well, he probably just kind of, you know, made some money on his own. It's kind of like how we would go and have a little side business or something like that. But it was much bigger than that. We look in Acts 20, where it talks about, you know, what he was, when he was encouraging the Ephesians there. And he says, listen, I made enough money with my own hands to support myself, but also all those that were with me. And so he had a business that was thriving to such a degree that he was able to bring all those that were planting churches with him. And what's interesting about this, like, well, how important was that to him? Well, it certainly talked about it a lot, that in fact he was making tents or just preaching in the marketplace. Even preaching in the marketplace there, I don't think he was just coming to the marketplace, I'm going to preach it. I think he was doing business and sharing the gospel at the same time. Well, the Bible's not explicit that was going on. But I think there's an inference there that he was doing business there, selling things, making sure inventory was right. You know, maybe he was teaching some other people. He had Priscilla and Aquila who had the same skill set. Maybe doing it together as a, to be able to supply more and managing that whole cycle. And that he developed enough cash flow. He made a profit. He wasn't like saying, well, profit's bad, I'm going to give these things away. No, he made a good profit that he could support all that are with him. And I think it was important enough, you know, he loved the church at Ephesus. And this was his last time seeing him in Acts 20. And they were crying together and all this. And what's the last thing he told them, you know, that he encouraged them in? And even if this is one of the most important things, I'm going to leave you with this thought or whatever. And he says, remember this. Remember to work with your own hands. Remember how I made a bunch of money and supported all those with me. Remember to do that. And so it was very important. I mean, I think he was leaving kind of, remember this strategy of being able to work hard and share the gospel through that. And I think that we did remember it for a long time, and we're remembering it again as many of the sources of funding that have traditionally been there for the last 200 years are drying up, and we're saying again, hey, wait. Because the amount of growth of seeing, you know, businesses as mission or business on mission, the growth in that is tremendous. I mean, it's almost in every area of mission, this is the primary way. And not just to develop cash flow, but realizing, oh, wait, this is how people normally interact with society, and the gospel moves through that, and we can plant churches through it. And it's a very naturalistic way that's self-funding, yes, as well as self-perpetuating, because it's a natural way to do the
gospel. There's an interview online between Dallas Wilson and John Piper, where John Piper is talking about the fact that at Bethlehem Baptist Church, over the course of the last 30 years, they have managed to raise up an army of young people who are ready to go and give their lives for the cause of the gospel. And the funding isn't there to send them out. And Douglas Wilson's comment is, oh, you outran your supply lines. You know, you went beyond your supply lines. And one of our hopes, really, even, we've even talked about this as the desire to grow the church in one building and grow a district rather than immediately plant, though we do want to plant, is to increase the number of business people and people really making income here that are coming alongside the already large number of people ready to go out. And so these kind of conversations of how our business people are going to really teach our more theologically or proclamation-minded people, and how those kind of people are going to be fed by and encouraged, and how they're going to really work together and sometimes be the same person. Really, those are really just really important conversations we want to see happening here all the time, because there really has to be a greater partnership between business and mission if Emmanuel is not going to outrun our supply line real fast.
If I could say something to that line as well. I mean, I think there's a stronger call to entrepreneurship than we give typically in moving things forward. And if you look at 1 Corinthians 7, I think 23, that there's a call there saying, hey, you know, if you're a slave, which was in many ways a slave is equivalent to an employee, not perfectly
kind of an indentured
today.
Employee.
Yeah. If you listen to Mark Driscoll's podcast on the end of Ephesians that he's had recently, called, I think the title of it is I Am Rewarded. And if you listen to that, he goes into like first century slavery versus employeeship here today and spends a lot of time kind of developing that out in parallel. Really good. For a lot of perspectives on work too in there, but and that was just the last 4 weeks ago, and so, but you know, you look at that call and it says, hey, you know, those are your slaves, you know, try to be free, because then you can be a better slave to Christ. Well, freedom at that time meant that you owned your own business, that you were an entrepreneur. You went out and you had your shop in the bottom floor and lived on the top floor or whatever of your house there, and you had your own business. And so Paul is calling there, I believe, us to listen. If you can have your own business, you can be a better slave to Christ. If you can, your cash flow can be more devoted to that. Your time. If I want to leave at 2 o'clock because there's a guy who's, you know, his wife just cheated on him or whatever, and I need to go minister, I just leave. I mean, there's no one. I don't have to be responsible to anyone. I say, I'm going to do this. You take care of this. I got to go do this, and I can be a better slave to Christ. And so there is a real call in doing that, and whether you're in seminary, I want you to think about, you know, while I was in seminary, I didn't finish. I mean, it took me a long time. It took me 7 years to get my master's there, but I started 4 or 5 kind of businesses at the same time, and it really, there was opportunity there to grow a whole lot in that and learn, and I would just encourage those that are in seminary say, listen, I want to be on the mission field. I want to be to go and pray. Even if you fail it, like some of them, I just totally went to the toilet. But I learned so much from doing it that I would never say it was a waste of time. It was just a failure and a learning opportunity. And so I just want to encourage you in that.
So to the seminary student who's like wondering how to get macaroni for next week. Where is the venture capital available to start these businesses? What's the starting point?
It's your time.
Yeah.
It's your time. I didn't have any money. I mean, I mean, the first time, the
but
first
you got,
business.
You got some money at some point in time, didn't you, or no?
I did for Mixer Direct.
Okay.
But that was much later. Money? The others, no. And so the first one I ever did was a medical device company. And it was a guy who was already doing it in the city, and I happened to just run across him, and he said, you know, hey, you seem like a sharp guy, you want to do this business with me? Okay. And we kind of did it together. He had all the experience. He actually won kind of Entrepreneur of the Year in the United States, and I didn't know that, so I was like halfway through, like, wait, you're really good at this. And so he gave me some good practices, but maybe you get with somebody else. That's one model. Another one I started, which is a cleaning company, took no money. I said, I'm going to clean stuff at night myself. And so another seminary student myself started that, and we just started cleaning places at night and like figuring out how to manage it. And then we got other people to do that. We would go out and sell, And so there's a lot of businesses that are out there that take, okay, what skills do I have? I know how to, there's another guy who made pipes or something like that. And he was really skilled at woodworking. And so he used that skill to kind of fund his seminary. Now he's doing church planting in Tennessee. So, there's a lot of ways.
I'll ask you about three more questions and I'll open it up. So if you have questions, we'll have plenty of time to hopefully get to many of them, if not most of them, but just a couple more questions. When we talked over lunch the other day, one of the things I was encouraged by and a little bit surprised by is you're both very busy at work. Obviously, you can't be the president of a company and not sometimes be working 12-hour days and those kind of things. But you're also very involved in the church. Tell us about what you're doing at Sojourn, what your ministry is there, what that entails.
Yeah, it's interesting at Sojourn. Like, even while these businesses are growing, like, a lot of that I didn't realize at the time. Like, oh, what is happening to me? I realized when I started getting involved in the church, I realized how much I was coached in learning about business. So I learned about how to manage financials, how to manage people, you know, some of the kind of basic kind of wisdom type activities. I learned, wow, these are really transportable to helping in the local church. And so I've been able to involve kind of on the finance side, on discipleship. Because some of our primary mode of discipleship is through our community group, and a lot of what community groups need is some good management. And so, in terms of this regularized structure, regularized planning, how do you do communication so it's clear? And these new leaders that are coming up have never led anything before. How do you train new leaders? Well, I learned a lot of that. So all these kind of issues that we run into, I'm realizing, wow, the Lord kind of prepared me for helping in the eldership of the church through my career. And even the failure, I can be encouraged and saying, the Lord is there. And so, I mean, because as people fail in leadership, I've got to drop out.
You're currently attending services on Sunday mornings?
Yeah, currently attending.
Say yes
services.
To that.
Yeah, it's like yes. I'm currently attending services. I'm a community pastor, which means on the south end of Louisville. The groups that are there that are west of 65, I've been given pastoral kind of responsibility.
You're on the phone with those leaders.
It depends on their need level. I'll talk to them. At least bi-weekly, by email or phone, making sure they're on track. There's some, you know, one that'll have a lot of, and so we'll talk a whole lot more. And then we set up a regular schedule to be in those groups and be able to manage them well, and know the people and know what's going on in them. We just kind of took over that role, so we're kind of in a transition phase. Like, how do we set up those structures that work for everybody? We have 7 kids that are out of the womb. And so, you know, us descending on a community group is kind of like, 9 people. So you're suddenly doubling the community group one day. And
you bring a community group
with
you.
Most of them are, basically. Most of them are small little people. But I also get involved with, like, the business coaching that we do and business ministry that we have, Sojourn Work. I get involved with Sojourn Kids a lot as well. And I keep some other classes. So I stay pretty broad based there in a lot of different areas. I've been there a long time.
How are you teaching some of these business skills and business ideas to your kids? We've got a bunch of boys here from different families and dads that'll be asking, some dads from the last month. And how are you teaching your boys to really do business for the glory of God?
So it's just living together with them and talking about it. So I don't, like, a lot of people say, well, I talk about business at work and then, you know, we're just not going to talk about that at night. They're integrated, involved with Mixer Direct. They're in there probably monthly looking at the equipment, me talking about what's going on, what's next, what's happening. And so they're integrated with me in my business life. I don't keep them separate from that. And so they kind of see what that looks like, and I can model that. But even more, saying, okay, how can they start living some of that out? Cameron, I think it was last year, we kind of started the first business for him.
He's 10.
Growing vegetables in our garden. And so I gave him some money for seed capital. You know, he literally. and so he could then plant, you know, his garden and see what's going to be kind of bountiful. I think he made, how much did you make? $17? Or did you make more than that? $17. So, I mean, we had a little balance sheet and income statements and such that he would, you know, log all his transactions on. And we had a purchase. I agreed to buy it for kind of half the price of the grocery store, which probably was, I strangled it to negotiate that. Probably too hard for it. Probably should have been more generous with that. But, and so he learned that. Now he's growing herbs, which are much more like your profit per ounce or whatever. And you can sell this little thing. He's like, you can sell this little thing for $4 at Meijer's or whatever. I can grow that and like make, you know, as much as I made on the whole garden on one bush. I was like, yeah, that's true. Good job. And so, you know, some of these things, you know, are really modeled, but then giving him opportunity to carry that out and be able to kind of see what that looks like, to take responsibility and move forward. And even tithing, one of the things that he learned on is that hey, okay, I made this money. I said, okay, it's time to give, make money. You know, you're expected to give. So, yeah, it was just kind of like really cool to see him make the money, and then he took all his quarters or whatever his tithe and like threw it in the basket.
Let me open it up to you, brothers. Would someone volunteer to take this microphone around? Great, Spencer.
Welcome back.
Who's got a question for Mark? Dom. We'll start with Warren since it's right. Okay, go ahead, Dom.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you being here. How do you think, and I know you've responded to some of this already, but how do you think church leaders have really sort of devalued the place for competitiveness and really undervalued the role of ambition? I know sometimes guys who are very competitive and very ambitious are labeled as sort of like self-seeking, or can be labeled as prideful, but really they're just doing a godly thing by being competitive and being full of ambition. So how do you think church leaders have devalued the place of competitiveness and under-emphasized ambition?
Yeah, our competitive nature can be both good and bad. And so I think we've emphasized the kind of the bad aspects of it and de-emphasized the good aspects of it. And so the good aspect of being competitive really is I want to be competitive as a gospel believer to love and care. And so, and to produce this. So what that looks like then is, I want to win business for Mixer Direct for me, because, you know, when I'm competitive and win in that, like the bit, like those that are with me, when my investors win, my employees win, my family wins, my church wins, you know, and so that I serve better by winning. One little illustration of this with, back to the kids. At Easter, we go to this Easter egg hunt that they take. It's in Fort Thomas, Kentucky, and they take, I don't know, 10,000 eggs, fill them, throw them out into the field. And they group them by ages, and they get a fire truck out and blow a horn, and everyone goes in and gets eggs. And so beforehand, I'm thinking strategically with the kids. Okay, where are the highest density of eggs that is closest to the entry point, or maybe one that's far off that you run to before other kids get there and fill up your basket. So we're scouting the territory, thinking about like vector trajectories and how, you know, different like densities of people that are around it and what that fight looks like. And if they look like they're going to be competitive at going and get it, maybe move over here. So we figure that out. We find a place to go. We wait for the horn. And I just say, focus. You've got to go get that. And so I'm coaching them. And then, bam, they go. I'm alongside them. Get it. And we fill up the basket really fast. Then we say, okay, who is weak and didn't make it and couldn't do it? And then we say, let's go put some in their basket. And so our competitiveness allows us to be caring for those that might have not got any eggs because of whatever reason. And so, you know, that's kind of the same thing. Our competitiveness allows us to be greater givers by being competitive, because it's not a zero, and this gets back to that, it's not a zero-sum game, economics or not. It's money velocity producing wealth, and so you increase that velocity. There's more wealth to give, and the competitiveness allows that velocity.
You said that business, our approach to business flows out of love.
Yeah.
But in any given moment in business, you're dealing with loving lots of different people. So when I'm setting pricing for our products, I'm loving our customer. I'm loving my employer. I'm loving my family because I want to make more. And I'm loving our vendors. So all these different relationships, I feel like they're in tension with one another. Can you work on, is that just something we keep, the fact that we have to love these multiple parties simultaneously, in tension, or is there a primary role? I mean, you can't just love the customer so much that you drop the product way down. I mean, you can get down to where you're not making anything. So then you can say, well, the market controls it. Well, then you're market-driven and not customer-driven. So can you work on...
Yeah, thank you. I think that's a really good... Because that's where management and the difficulty is, that you say, okay, how can we love people? And let me just draw an illustration that kind of makes it how this plays out. I had a sales manager one time, not a Mixer Direct, another company, that I had to fire. Okay, and you say, well, firing seems like such an unloving activity. And you say, well, how do I fire well? I get this question from people I coach all the time. What do I do with this person that's underperforming and this is not where they should be? You know, is it loving for me just to fire them? I know that they need this money for their family and that, you know, these kind of things. How can I do that? And you say, you can love somebody well on firing. So this sales manager, I had to fire her, and I just didn't. I said, listen, I love you. I care for you. You know, you do not fit this position. It's not who God has made you to be in this position. And so I'm not really firing you. I'm freeing you to do what God wants you to do. And so I am firing. You're gone from the company. But I'll be clear about that. But that I'm freeing you to what you need to be doing. And what she was like, okay. And we made a friend. I gave her a recommendation, actually. And she's moved forward. Now she has her own company doing search engine marketing. And, like, that's exactly what she should be doing. She's doing it super well. And she says to me today, Mark, thank you for firing.
They all work out like that.
They don't all work out like that. But that's a good example of one that worked out well. Sometimes it's, I hate you and I'm going to come and kill your family or whatever. But that, we can do it in that way that says, listen, I am looking out for this person and this is not where they should be. But even like pricing, you say, okay, you have to look at kind of a higher level of love and say, how am I loving like the, and this is the way I do it, a hierarchical approach, how am I loving the maximum number of. So even in the firing, I'm loving the rest of my employees because this person just didn't fit. It's hurting everybody. You know, if I price my products too low, I am, you know, maybe in the short of doing a short term love for them, but I'm going out of business. And now these people can't get the product that they wanted and need. And so I have to produce, you know, the profit is my ability to produce this in the future. They're paying for my of being able to produce a product in the future, and that's what they're paying for in that profit.
I think the idea that love is faithful love, that it's not just one-off love, it's not a one-night stand of business, but it's really trying to love someone for a decade or 100 years.
Yeah,
requires that you make a profit and set that price on fire.
Yeah, exactly.
Hi, Will, and I'm thinking through the lens of missionaries. Talking about business missions,
mm-hmm.
and the thoughts that come to mind. Well, first, I agree that a lot of people are moving to a business as missions model. But can you speak to maybe two things? One, how do we marry the biblical precedent for raising support and for allowing the people to fund us?
Yeah.
And for doing business as missions? And also, how does it look like, at least in your experience, if you have at Sojourn, to shepherd others and seeing, am I being called to doing business as missions overseas, or am I being called to maybe raise support to go overseas?
Thank you. There, in saying this, I'm not saying it's wrong to raise support. I think we have biblical precedent for where Paul says, hey, thank you for your giving to the Philippians. I can, you know, allow me to minister for a year or whatever here, and great, you know, fruit from that. So it's definitely, you know, and for Paul, it was kind of both. I mean, okay, I'm going to work this business. Oh, wait, there's not enough business here for me to really work it. Your support is making it so I can still minister here, even though nobody wants my tents here because of whatever reason. And so, you know, both are valid models to function within. And so when we're looking at kind of coaching people in terms of which one do I do? And do I do this way or that way, or a combination of both? You know, there's a team we're sending out from Sojourn now that's a combination. They got jobs that they're going to be working, but it's not enough to kind of fund them because they're not going to be doing full time in those jobs. And so there's a funding component that's on top of that the church can give to. And then there's others that are going that would be kind of fully funded, but are using, you know, like those that work working with Mixer Direct, they're not funded by Mixer Direct at all. They'll make a commission if they sell something, but they've really, the church is giving 100%, but they're using the business aspect as a way to, in the future, be able to do business missions. Although they really have several businesses they've done before that have been successful, that they're actually pulling funding in almost completely. So it's in terms of how does this look, it's very, very varied. I mean, there's a book by that I would encourage you to read by Patrick Lai called Tent Making. And he assigns the designation T1 through T6, which is a tent maker levels. And so he has a whole bunch of different levels that he brings it to of different ways that can be done. Where like a T1, if I remember the definition, I may have got this reversed, but a T1 would be, you know, I am with a large company that's in Dubai, and I'm working there, and I'm looking to support the local church, and I'm fully invested in working in my job. Where T6 would be more of the, I'm fully funded by the church, but I'm using a business as a way to be able to build relationships and things like that. And so there's this big range everywhere between there, and he helps define that, and then how even that would look to implement each of those key levels, and it's kind of the premier work on being able to do that. Even those are going forward. If you want me to hook you up with some people that can help myself and others in doing that, you know, certainly we're open to do that. Would love to do that.
Lance, John, Charlie.
It seems that there's a lot of. Well, let me say, with your line of thinking, it seems like there's a ramification that churches could maybe, like established churches could establish businesses to further their mission. So it seems like a lot of dying churches, like local preschools, or those sort of things to kind of keep their budget going. Is there a place in your thinking for churches of, say, Sojourn size or our size to use our resources to better use our buildings or those sort of things to generate more profits for the sake of mission?
Yeah. Oh, there's definitely a case for that. But I wouldn't do it just to generate profits, but I'm always, and this is maybe a little where my nuance is from other people, it's a little bit different, is that I think the operation should always move forward the gospel as well. And so developing a business model, for example, if you had a business model where you have, okay, I have open sections for a daycare, it's not going to be about how can I develop cash flow in the daycare, but then how can I serve the children sees in the parents' needs intentionally, and also say, here's a connection to the community of the church that, you know, that single mothers need, and say, how can we reach out and then with the gospel and with our care to like move them to a place that actually kicks them out of the daycare, or they don't need it anymore, because they're able to work out in such a way or integrate with the care of the local church in doing so. Another would, like, for example, we're looking at a business, just to give you something here in Louisville, that would be a business that would serve a large group of refugees in the South End. And, you know, they're in need of a certain service. And saying, okay, well, you know, they're having to walk, it's laundry service, they're having to walk, you know, many, many blocks with their laundry because there's no place in this huge apartment complex to walk their clothes. You know, I'm going to start, you know, business there to help them and be able to do that, and then use the cash flow to actually fund ministries that are to these refugees that are coming in. So it's saying, how can I think the church should be about starting businesses, because what I've noticed is that they're sustainable ways of something going forward, where you're not having to sit there and raise money all the time and say you're able to just do what you need to do, and through that you're able to care. But that's why I want the operations to be tied to it, because if we just do it for cash flow, it's another money raising strategy, and it gets us off the goal a little bit.
So let me ask a follow up question to Lance, kind of as a pastor. So encouraging businessmen, spurring them on, helping them think missionally, amen, yes. And yet there's a sense in which the idea of the most influential businessmen beginning to run the church because they ultimately have the purse strings is not a new story.
Right.
And so there's a sense in which one of the things we've been blessed by as we've pursued giving from businessmen is basically saying to them, here's the vision. If you're on board, we'd love you to give, but we're the elders.
Yeah,
God's given us this responsibility. He's made this group of men, hopefully spiritually mature, to lead. Any words on how we accomplish what Lance is talking about, and sort of keep that independence to the eldership, ultimately to love the whole congregation?
I think the way you do that is that you're just not beholden to the money. You believe that God is moving you forward, not the cash flow. And so when you believe that, and that's the true gospel. Like, the cash flow is just a means, and the operation is just another ministry of the church, but one that the businessman finally feels kind of like fulfills a lot of his gifting that the Lord's given him to really be able to serve. So I don't know how many like businessmen I talk to, a ton of them, who just feel like they have no place in the church for their gifting. They want to care, and they want to do something that really loves people, and they want this so badly. But there's just not a place for them, there's not a place in the church for them, and so they're like, okay, well, I guess I'll just, you know, teach kids on Sunday, and that's just what I'll do. And that's where you get this differentiation between the divorce from their what they consider their real life and their church life. And so this kind of also brings together their thinking and their actions, and being able to say, well, wow, I can use my gifting to really move the mission of the church forward, and get them engaged, and now you have this kind of healthiness of both like breathing in theology and exiting out your service and your gifting in that service. Does that make sense? Yeah. But yeah, they should learn to submit to the elders in that. I mean that with good elder maturity, I think that it protects you a little bit, because I have seen that much times. Okay. The big givers in the church now wield like tremendous influence, and they wield influence at their jobs already, and so they're used to influence. And so, you know, it's easy for them to kind of come in and say, "Well, that's stupid how you're doing it. This is the way you need to be doing it, because you know I built this company, it's $20 million, and you've got, you know, 400 people. What do you know?" And so the elders sometimes feel like, "Well, he's right. I do." I mean, and then it's like, "Wait, no, like." The elders are been given and gifted by God to run this, you know, and that church member, you know, hey, you are in this place, you are here to serve, and that's
by God's grace, I've never heard those words. I'm just hoping by God's grace never to hear those words.
But, by God's grace, that'd be great.
Amen. John, I think, was next.
Yeah, Mark, you had talked a little bit about how you got into your particular business.
Mm-hmm.
Was it a family-owned business that you stepped into, or an ownership of just some private individuals and not a family? And how did that relationship go at first, and how did you make them comfortable with you if there are a lot of family members involved, and just getting into that? And the second part of my question is, you know, you have 8 kids, you're, you know, expanding into France, it sounds like. Are there any tips and or tricks for us to manage our actions? How do you set goals for yourself, you know, at a high level and a daily level?
Sure, sure. Let me start with the first one. It actually, Mixture Direct started as just an idea that we had. And so there wasn't any kind of, nothing existed. So we built it from literally at the beginning. I would be on the phone with the customer. Like, I'd hang up the phone. They ordered something. I'd go downstairs and I'd build it and pack it up and ship it. And so that was like the beginning. And so it was, we were like a garage that we had rented for next to nothing. And people actually, when we got our first big break was $500,000 order. I'm so glad they didn't visit us, because we were just a garage with tools hanging on the wall with like a place that we had kind of renovated to look, you know, half acceptable. And I was one guy and my partner downstairs who didn't know anything about mixing. And so, I mean, it was one of those things where, it was big in God's grace on that. And unfortunately, like our investor, myself, my partner, three of us are of one mind on this vision and value, and so there wasn't a lot of conflict, and so it really was by God's grace something that was very easy initially. But part of it is because it was so well defined. Like when we built the company and how we set out our articles of organization and our bylaws and all of that, we just knew. We had been down these, like both my partner and I, this is like fourth and fifth business, kind of knew some, like, so we built all this that everything was predicated, okay, if this person dies, if this happens, you have to sell for the price, we're always going to have the same salary, like all the things that we know get to be conflict, we kind of worked out on the front end and got it set down. It really minimized conflict going forward. We also get together and pray every morning, my partner and I. And so we kind of take, okay, what are the hard things that are for us today? Okay, you know, this employee, we're going to have to talk to them. Okay, let's pray for that. And so both of us kind of throw out what's going to be difficult for the day. We say, Lord, work through these difficulties. And then we go a lot. Right now, we go really our separate ways. We're on different sides of this. So, but we always come together. And that unity, others have said, yeah, seeing that unity that you guys have, like, really breaks down like the normal problems there are in partnership, where like employees are trying to get the partners to kind of fight against one another and like power games, and you know, we just haven't seen much of that by God's grace. But you want me at the second part of the question? Sure. Sorry.
And I was gonna say, then Joshua and Danny.
I can go all day. So
What we'll do after that is, if you have a few more minutes, guys, can come and ask.
Yeah.
Or actually even better, so everyone can profit. Close at 10:30. Anyone needs to go, grab a cup of coffee, go back there. Everyone wants to stay, just come and gather around here and keep peppering it.
Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds great. What was the second question? Now I'm totally like... Yeah, in terms
goal
of
setting.
Goals. We keep 5-year personal and business goals that are out there. Tape them loosely, held by the Lord. And then we say, okay, what does that look like? And then we work backwards and say, okay, what does 3 years need to be then? What does 2 years need to be? What do we need to be in a year? What do I need to be in halfway through the year? And then that drives what we do as a cloud-based, task-based system called Asana. We have Asana.com. And then we can assign all the tasks for myself and others into like categories that feed each one of those. We try and keep it to 5 goals or less. And then we kind of know what to do each day. Based on that, that's all moving the vision forward in one direction. And then for my time allocation, a lot of times in terms of all the things I have going on, I just set up a hierarchy structure of like what's important. So, and then try and integrate it with my family as much as possible. When I come and speak, I bring, you know, kids with me. If I'm going to go do something, a lot of times my family is with me. If I'm traveling for business, to work on a system, we're all loading up in the van. We're driving to Wisconsin a few weeks ago, and we're going to do it together. And so trying to like bring as much in together as possible, so that I know that my work hours have to be long. I know that a lot of my attention has to be there. If I can integrate with my family, both train them and get time with them.
That was kind of my question. How do you balance, you know, family life? You've got 7 kids, and I'm thinking of getting ready to have 4 kids. Overwhelmed by that, and then, you know, being a leader in the church and work, and just, yeah, leading your family to rest well. And just,
you know, I screw it up a lot too. Like, my wife is great at giving me feedback and says, Mark, even leaving here, says, Mark, you're gone too much. You're leaving next week, speak at NAMM. You know, you were gone this week, meeting with guys, discipling. It's like, she'll just give me feedback on that. And then say, okay, I'm sorry, sweetie, I'll be here, and I'll clear schedule things. So we have kind of a very, she's helpful to me, and to like help me kind of recognize some of that as I get tunnel vision on certain things. So being very, I mean, having that thing, this is my weakness, here's what I'm doing, my wife, and she gives very open feedback and what I need to do, and then reacting to that well helps kind of maintain that balance and make it workable, and so that I'm not, you know, blown up.
I just have a, I'm just wondering what your perspective or what your view on debt for the business, and just kind of a practical question. Just what is your viewpoint on that, financing the business and debt?
We don't use debt. You know, we've done 2 build outs in the last year and a half of our plant. We're in the midst of one right now. By God's grace, we've done it all with cash we generated from the business. We think that debt makes us a slave. And so, and also it's a risk to the business in hard times. And so that we can't react in a way that maximized our lovingness to our customers, employees and investors, if we take on a bunch of debt. With that being said, I'm not someone who says you can never use debt. There may be a right time to use debt, and as we like would look at an acquisition, we would probably use part of it as debt. But that we're very, very, very cautious with debt, and just really look at things closely, because debt can make you. Because you can do things that you wouldn't normally do in business and in life because you got this big debt that's beating down on you. My competition is in a lot of debt, and it makes it stupid. It makes me win. So, it's not help. It can be helpful, but man, it's, most of the time it's not. And it's most of the time, I guess I'm okay in saying, most of the time, if God wants you to do something, you know, and he'll provide the funds for it to happen, maybe apart from debt, although I don't want to be too harsh on that. But that's kind of been our viewpoint, is that he'll provide the funds for the growth. If the funds aren't there, then we're either not being creative enough on how to do it on less funds. Because debt's also like the lazy man's way of doing stuff, too, where you say, well, I don't know how to figure this out and do it cheaper for the cash I have, so I'm going to just borrow the money and blow it. And now I'm really in trouble. So, yeah.
Any last words you want to say to us, brother? This has been so helpful. We really, really appreciate it. Anything else you wanted to add?
No, just my thanks, and just the encouragement of your questions to me is great. And just, I just really appreciate the fact that you guys, you know, engage on this. I want to encourage you to think through your business as a way, and when I say your business, it's not necessarily you own it, but what the job that you've been given, when you do that faithfully, it is one of your greatest worships to the Lord. and it's one of your greatest witnesses to the Lord too. And that whatever that means, whether, you know, it's what people, the world would call a low position or the world would call a high position, you know, when you do that faithfully, you are a grand testimony to the grace of God all around you. Even when you don't see it or know it, it just feels like, well, I'm just doing my job. Well, it is a grand testimony to the faithfulness of Christ.
Let me encourage you as we go, just to be talking about these things as we part, to make sure if the Lord has convicted you that you need to be adding core values to your business, or you need to be articulating these things for yourself. Maybe you're not in a business where you control the core values, to be speaking about that to one another. We really want to be a community that's not just hearing these things individually and going, but really discussing them and sharpening one another in them. I want to encourage many of you are gospel community group leaders. Consider, you may want to take your gospel community group for doing business to the glory of God or something like that, or starting a men's Bible study in the morning or in the evening with that book. That would be just a great way to just really go through these things again and really be encouraged by them afresh. So let me pray for us, then we'll break. If any of you want to just come here to the front, have a seat and ask some more questions, you're welcome to do that. Father, thank you so much for Mark. Thank you so much for you. Thank you. You're the one who created business. You're the one who created an entrepreneurial spirit. You're the one who said, go be fruitful and multiply and have dominion over the whole earth. But all of these things are your ideas, and we're just getting the privilege to think your thoughts after you. Lord, help us to just take hold of everything that's been good and to leave aside something that might not apply to us personally. Lord, we pray that you would just cultivate a community at Emmanuel, where there's just tremendously hardworking, God-glorifying, worshiping businessmen and women who really generate huge amounts of money, Lord, to provide for their families and to provide for their neighbors and really to take the gospel to the ends of the earth. And we pray this in Christ's name.